The Crocodile Hunter says goodbye, Geraldo's mustache debuts, and we're calling in the Stunt Cocks this week on 30-2010.
30-2010, 30-2010, for decades every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-2010, 30-2010, the presses are awaiting us. We're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah, suck this podcast. It's 30-2010, the internet's weekly look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago. Hi, I'm one of your hosts, Christopher Antista.
I'm Dave, and I'm a man. A manny man, a man.
Candle in the Wind, Diana Goodman.
Oh, look at that. Does that come out right? Anyway, I'm sure we'll get to it. This is an oddly huge week for television, unbelievably, and just a personal favorite film of mine is coming out.
Yeah, some networks are just getting ahead of the curve and putting out their new TV shows for the first week of September, so yeah.
But yes, a lot of exciting stuff to talk about. Movies, TV news, and games. We are talking this week, September 1st through the 7th in 1987, 1997, and 2007. Think back, where were you? I love that this show tends to help people figure out where they were in time by what movies you saw with who. Oh, that was the last one I saw with my granddad. Mm. It's great. We have a whole comment show just for our patrons at patreon.com/lasertime. But we have a lot to get into, so let's do it. Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. More Idaho shit. A bunch of fucks in RVs sitting out and reading books.
What a bunch of dorks.
Yeah. No. I always say I've never in my life thought about retirement. I was just like, holy shit, that looks awesome. That motherfucker can leave and go wherever he wants and gets a chillerize all day. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of this shit. I got to start looking towards retirement.
Oh, mine is I'm either going to move to Orlando or Anaheim and just be full on just Disney vlogger. I'll be a 70-year-old Disney vlogger. Yeah, I'll be in Dave and Buster's every day.
You have your own secret menu and you'll get your own red car.
Hey, Jessica, how's it going? Yep, it's dinner time.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. Oh, okay.
Oh, bring me the number three.
Yeah, this Frozen Babies thing is just ruining everything that's important at Disney.
I think I'm saving Assassin's Creed for retirement. I feel like by the time I'm old enough,
there'll be like 40 of them.
There'll be 40 of them. I'm like, I haven't even touched one.
We can
but
next,
I
we
suppose
can
it's just starting now.
That's me in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
I'll finally get into it.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. September 1st through the 7th. Toni Morrison's Beloved is published. I am Beloved and She is Mine. I cannot believe I've read that book. I have, yes.
Was
I forget
for
why. It might have been for school, but I was, for some reason in college, I was reading a ton.
It's also like one of Oprah's last movies, and I think probably a decade and some change.
Yeah. Wrinkle of Time. There's a huge distance in between
them. A little part in Selma.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, is a starring role? Yeah.
Yeah, like she is the centerpiece of the film. I don't think she's ever had a central starring role in a film before. Yeah. But a truly disturbing book. Situations I barely want to talk about. Yeah. But it did introduce me to the term making water for some reason. I have to go make water. I say it sometimes when I have to piss. And also in 1987, Michael Chang becomes the youngest tennis player to win the U.S. Open at age 15.
Wow. Yep, we're slackers.
We're slackers. I heard this, I don't know if I said this on another show. Take it out if I did. Mm-hmm. But I was listening to the Sklar brothers talk about that, like, there are no American contenders in tennis anymore. Hmm. But just sort of the idea of, like, well, do you have a kid? Would you push your kid to be a tennis pro? No. Yeah. Nobody does that anymore. Nope. That might never happen again in this country. Family values have changed to such a degree. I don't think most,
how much
let's be honest, affluent white parents are going to force their children into...
Outside of the Williams sisters, like, who's making great money With tennis.
I'm sure there's some money in there.
Yeah, I'm sure. But I mean, if you have that kind of power to be a good at tennis, like play a different sport. Maybe.
But the most interesting thing that happened in tennis, in my opinion, is the fake documentary 7 Days in Hell. Check that out if you have access to HBO Go. But 1987 in movies, starting in September, Stakeout is still number one. Diana, you were not wrong. This movie has some staying power.
It was a surprise hit.
Yeah,
it's weird for an action comedy to stay that popular. But there hasn't been huge competition.
And honestly, a bunch of weird shit I never heard of. Zigen. What's this about, D?
It's a Shohei Imamura joint. Mm. So, Japanese film.
Under the Son of Satan. The S-U-N, Son of Satan. What a great title. But then I see it stars Gerard Depardieu, and I'm not interested anymore.
It won the Palme d'Or that year at Cannes.
Did it really?
Yeah.
What the hell is that about?
It's about a priest, and I think there's like a murder, or did a woman murder something? I don't know. It's back when Gerard Depardieu wasn't like the punchline to like, French people think he's hot, ew.
Yeah, it's sort of like, well, what other French actors can you name? Yeah. Oh, none. So he's just going to be a punchline forever. And yes, he does look hilarious now. But this is the weirdest thing I had never heard of.
Starring Scott Glenn as John Creasy. They want him to pay for the girl. He wants them to pay with their lives. Man on Fire.
Man on Fire. No, not that one. But I had no idea Man on Fire was a remake.
Right.
At all.
It's an adaptation of a book. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, Man on Fire. The Denzel Washington version. Tony Scott was supposed to direct this version, and they told him no because he was too inexperienced coming off of Top Gun.
What?
And then he eventually directs the remake. That's pretty nuts. I've never heard of this original film, and let alone, like, it's just odd to think of Tony Scott, like, having a hard on, like, I'm going to make that fucking movie whether they tell me I can or not. I'm going to remake it with the biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
And he did. And I didn't like the remake, but it's on TV a lot, so I assume it has its fans.
That's okay.
It's about a kidnapper who ends up building a bond between the person, or a bodyguard who ends up building a bond with one of the children he's watching. They get kidnapped, and he goes on a vigilante mission, a Liam Neeson-esque takedown of an entire operation. That's all I know about it.
Man.
Yep.
And yeah, I don't think any of these movies are going to be toppling Stakeout.
No.
It's my personal prediction.
In hindsight, this would have been a good week for Chris to release one of his movies. Maybe one of his amateur Mr. Bill shorts featuring Godzilla.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be let in every theater.
Yeah, seriously. I can beat Gerard Depardieu, a subtitled French comedy. I can do this. But TV is a little more interesting across the board this week.
Yeah, I mean, still a little sparse because we are starting to eke into the fall season. Some stations are getting ahead of the game, but most aren't. There, in fact, we have one thing ending this week. American Bandstand ends its run on ABC after 30 years, but moves on to syndication for 2 more years.
This was a cultural reference I heard all the time. Dick Clark, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Never saw it in person, but I guess it ended when I was about 6 or 7.
Yeah, no, I remember it when it was on. And I mean, mostly I remember references to it going way back. Because it was a show that, I mean, I feel like almost every country has like a Top of the Pops or something like that, where it's like, it's a dance party show where they have on a band and then they lip sync to their big hit. Maybe there's a brief interview where they say something stupid. And then
it's got a nice
beat
and I can dance.
That's a wild sound.
Yeah, exactly. And then kids are like, I really like this song because, yeah, it's got a great beat and I can dance to it.
Mm-hmm. Rolls Royce, did you ever actually work at a car wash? No. But never saw it, but Dick Clark was pretty legendary.
But not only 30 years, for 57 to 87, think about how many kinds of music came through.
Like man, Jesus Christ, having to go from like doo-wop into the punk movement at some point.
Yep.
And I think Dick Clark got credit for not aging because he was with the series for not the entire time.
I think the entire time.
But at least 25 years, which is really impressive. I feel like Soul Train lasted a little longer, but these are some of the weird shows of my youth. The dancing around to hits.
I think when we already had Soul Train, and I think the grind kind of filled the niche of this. Like
Club La Villa bikinis.
Yeah, more less clothes, younger dancers. All of this, please, for 12-year-old.
It was our porn. Yes. Everybody would go home after school. Emerge at 4:30.
Like, they're inside this episode. Fuck it.
And also, Geraldo debuts in syndication.
This is such a go-to joke for 20 years.
Yeah, so
it's one of those things that, like, this wasn't even that long. Yeah, his career in talk shows was not as long as his career in everything else.
Yeah, he was doing other stuff before this. Like, he did the Al Capone's Vault thing.
We did the Al Capone Vault thing last year on 30-2010.
It wasn't Geraldo's fault, according to the B-sharps. But, Yeah, syndication is where he like made his name, where his show
nine years.
Flourished.
He's worked for Fox News for longer than he hosted this talk show.
But his show was kind of like the predecessor for like Jerry Springer.
Oh yeah,
where it's like, let's bring on
freaks and fights,
two groups that hate each other, and make them fight, or let's have this person reveal something scandalous, and then their mate comes out and confronts them about it.
Yeah, well, he's up against. Oprah's just starting kind of to get national syndication, and Donahue, who are both touchier, feelier, more professional, journalistic type
people.
I
want them to feel feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, they would have on controversial guests, you know, but yeah, Donahue would have on, like, Klansmen and kind of talk to them like people and...
What is your problem?
And not, you know, try to empathize with them, encourage them to be better people, and Geraldo would have them on... just to be as provocative as possible and hope a fight would start.
Like, Geraldo famously got into a fight on the show with, like, it was, like, Klansmen and... everyone who should be punching a Klansman.
November 3rd, 1988 episode involving white supremacists, anti-racist skinheads, black activists, and Jewish activists turned into a giant confrontation, choking, full-scale brawl, chairs were thrown, punches were received. And it
solved all racial discord, though. That's a good thing. Like, we're fine now.
I think it released some tension, but only for, like, the people on stage. Everybody else in the audience is terrified.
Everything else, it would be like, you know, my wife was born a man, and also she was black, and also we married a goat.
It's also, so, and this is
Springer type stuff.
Vague,
you know?
Wiki glances, but Newsweek coined the term trash TV to describe what Geraldo was to the rest of the universe. And there's no good clips.
Yes, but I did capture my favorite reference to Geraldo, the UHF spoof, Town Talk.
George Newman. He starts where the others stop.
Sex with furniture. What do you think?
The world watched in amazement as he unlocked the mysteries of Al Capone's glove compartment.
Uh-huh. Roadmaps!
He blew the lid off Satanism.
Look, all I was trying to say...
Oh, shut up, you pinhead! You make me sick!
Sometimes shocking, always controversial, he deals with topics that the other talk shows are afraid to touch. He pries, he pokes, he digs deep. He gets the answers, he gets the facts, and most of all, he gets the ratings.
That was a great visual sequence, but a Klan member, Jason Voorhees, and a small girl fighting one another, and Weird Al just gets hit with a collapsible chair for no reason. I love UHF. When do we get... Is that 89?
I think it's 89.
God damn, 2 years, people. Two years. That movie's great.
Can't wait.
But for games, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so this is a thing. We brought it up a couple months in a row now where it's like the way that release dates are like put on the internet, it's just... There are general September releases for the NES because, with the exception of The Legend of Zelda and like big games like that, it's like, who knew exactly when this game came out? Because you know what? They were put on a FedEx truck or whatever and slowly dispersed across America. There wasn't like embargoes and important things. It was like, when this cartridge has been smelted together, it's heading out there.
Get it off the press and send it out.
And stapled all the instruction manuals, get it out there. Who knows what day in September it actually showed up? September.
I meant to look up more of it, but someone had described it as like our movies hit limited runs. Yeah. Where like they send them to bigger territories, but there's no concrete release date. And like New York's going to get it before LA just because of the nature of the shipping.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma has to wait. But like there's a huge glut of things in this period.
So many games. 3D World Runner. Really like that one. It's like a first, kind of like a run. Like you're running forward, but you could use 3D glasses and it would actually be in 3D. That was rad. Deadly Towers. Double Dribble, a basketball game.
That's the one I like. That's the one I know.
Load Runner, Radon Bungling Bay, Ring King, a boxing game. Yeah. I think it's known more for there is a cutscene where you have a corner man who's working on you, but the graphics are so bad, it looks like your corner man is giving you a blowjob. so that's Ring King. Sky Kid, Spelunker, a game that I constantly mistook for Spelunky, which was a popular game of a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Spy Hunter.
I want to sing the praises of Spy Hunter. Really good game.
That making its debut on NES. Squoon. I don't know. Stadium Events.
Whoa.
That's the Power Pad game. That is
very rare.
Very rare game. Star Voyager. Stinger, a Konami space shooter, but it's also cutesy. Really fun. I like that one. Tiger Heli and Winter Games, but you have a clip of what?
Double Dribble. We played a ton of Double Dribble, and usually if you're my age, you follow up Double Dribble with the Konami cartridge struggling to say the words. It was notable for being the best basketball game up until that time.
By virtue of being the only basketball game.
One of the only basketball games.
But, the close-ups on Slam Dunk were awesome.
Like, it had little cutscenes when you did something, executed something well. It had not a cutscene, but a lush still that showed you slam dunking.
It's like a three animation still of going towards the basket, closer to the basket, dunking it. Because otherwise, it literally looks like Contra characters playing basketball. Yeah. They're so far away, and it's game's all right. But I love that, and I loved how it can't actually have the NBA license or NBA players. Yeah. So it's the New York Dragons, the Chicago Wizards,
the Los Angeles Billy Goats.
Yeah, and it's I'll still play it, and I'll still play as New York.
I love the game. For some reason, I went to this discount high-end fashion place, and they had a Double Dribble shirt that didn't fit me, and I bought it just because this is beautiful. I didn't know what the Double Dribble fan base looked like, but I was validated on a semi-recent episode of Family Guy. Peter and Cleveland actually they've done this twice where they actually play NES games for prolonged periods of time and discuss actual real glitches.
How about we play a little old school Double Dribble?
Okay, but no stupid ass shots from the corner, because that's a glitch in the software.
Game on!
Alright, bring it up to court.
And corner three!
No, that's what I'm talking about!
Steal! Up, corner three!
All right, here we go. It's
awesome to see a glitch that it had to make rules about. They did it with Bo Jackson and Tecmo Bowl. I don't know. It's hard. I'm not a Family Guy hater. Just want to put that out there. Yeah.
A great 8-bit rendition of the national anthem.
But it's not a notable week when we talk more about Double Dribble than anything else that comes out in 1987. But there are some notable music releases. The Last One to Know by Reba McEntire, actually by the Pet Shop Boys.
Those boys always saying actually.
Yeah. Rock and Roll by Motorhead and REM's Document, which totally includes the one that I love, and End of the World as We Know It. That is a great album, their fifth album. I used to know all the lyrics to End of the World as We Know It. I could spit them out in karaoke.
Yep.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes and airplanes. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Let's shelter in warts. I'm done because we can just close out with it instead.
Yeah.
La Bamba by Los Lobos is number one, but I think we heard that before. It's a cover song, man. Yeah. End of the World as We Know It is the dope track this week. I also love it. If you ever were paying attention to radio as much as I was working as a driver in the 2000s, a lot of the times when a radio station changes format or goes off the air, a station will play End of the World as We Know It for days straight. And so I hate these songs on the radio. Might as well go back to Little Ol' R.E.M.
Yep.
But here we go. End of the World as We Know It.
One of the big things that bugs me though, I wish it had a video that had some of the stuff that they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like a kid playing in a vacant house.
Yes. It's the most low-rent shot in Georgia video.
I want to see pictures of Leonard Bernstein and Lenny Bruce and Lester Bangs.
Did Billy Joel do that with We Didn't Start the Fire?
Kind of.
Okay.
A little bit. Yeah, and I want to know why are they shouting out all people whose initials are LB? Where's LB Mayer?
Well, let's consider it as we listen to this song as we close out the 1987 segment, but we will see you in 1997 for September 1st through the 7th, people. Stay tuned.
Ahoy hoy, everybody, this is Bob Mackey,
Chris Antista,
Henry Gilbert,
and when you're done listening to this, we'd like you to check out Talking Simpsons. It's our chronological exploration of The Simpsons, only on the Laser Time Podcast Network,
where we'll discuss why Barney is the MVP of Season 3.
Whatever you say, Mom!
When we try to figure out what every reference means.
Weren't you one of the little rascals?
And where we'll tell you how to avoid the poison donut.
There is a poisoned one, isn't there, Smithers?
No, sir. I discussed this with our lawyers. They consider it murder.
Damn their oily hides!
For all this and more, listen to Talking Simpsons every Wednesday at TalkingSimpsons.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
Now, who's hot, who not? Tell me who rock, who sell out in the stores? You tell me who flop, who cop the blue drop, who jewels got pop, who's mostly dozy down.
I do not know why. This song, Mo Money, Mo Problems by Notorious B.I.G. Puff Daddy featuring Mace of Harlem World fame. It's finally number one, finally unseating I'll Be Missing You.
Finally. Oh, but that's not fair because it's still more Puff Daddy.
And it's the same album.
And still the animated corpse of Biggie Smalls.
Yeah. But I don't know what it is. Everything about this video makes me happy. Because I think part of it, this can stand alone as kind of encapsulating this entire year for some reason. Mm. Puffy shirts in front of fluorescent lights.
Yep. Tracksuits.
Tracksuits. but they also, they're playing on a golf course for part of it. It's pretty funny. I don't know. I love that video. It makes me really happy. So does the song. New album's Girl by Danny Minogue.
Yep.
Abrasive, the debut of Puddle of Mud. Indoor Living by Superchunk. Ghetto D by Master P. Ghetto Dope, that was a huge phenomenon where I was from.
Mm-hmm.
And Calling All Stations, the final Genesis studio album, again without Phil Collins.
Yeah. What? Phil Collins would come in and out, you know, drop in, drop out, whatever.
It was the I Can't Dance his last tenure with Genesis.
Yeah, I believe so.
It's so strange that poor band having to move on after like two lead singers quit.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. How good are you as musicians that you can elevate people into two people into solo stardom and just get left in the dust? But newsishness. Was this missed in early August, Dee?
Yeah, in early August we missed that Steve Jobs had come back to Apple as the CEO and it was his first Macworld. To kind of come back as like, I have returned to you, my children. Gather unto me.
Yes. Mm.
And I will tell you about how we're going to save Apple. Because there was, I mean, the whole thing where like he was started the company. He gets forced out for a while.
Yeah.
He goes off and does Next and Pixar and a bunch of other stuff. And then.
Where did they go?
I know.
Those things.
Failures all around.
I wonder if he was rude to journalists at this Macworld convention. Like
probably.
He is like. Can you turn off all your laptops? We'll give you the news after the presentation.
No, I'm not hiding hickeys under this turtleneck. Terrible Steve Jobs impression. Sounds more like David Lynch.
Yeah. So, he comes back. Apple has been hurting pretty bad. They lost $1 billion in the previous fiscal year.
Wow.
Yes, we did a Talking Simpsons recently, and the... take
Apple
a note on your Newton, and it's like that sort of defines the era right before Steve Jobs came back into the fold. And I don't really know how much to attribute to him. My father bought me the biography not once but twice for Christmas, so I should probably read it at some point. Jesus Christ, I think Apple is, like, I forget the word, the most successful company in the world, sitting on, like, hundreds of billions of dollars in just reserve cash.
Yeah, but the idea that they lost $1 billion.
$1 billion.
They bring back Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. 2 years almost exactly, iMac rolls out.
Mm. Yeah.
And it is Apple everything from then until the end of time.
Yeah. I love telling that story because like I have friends who are like full-on like computer engineers now.
Mm-hmm.
But I went over to another buddy's house and he handed me like those awful glossy orange and white iMac clamshell things, just a disgusting looking computer.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings it outside to the pool and he's like, check this out. I'm like, what? He's like, it's internet. It's internet wirelessly. And I went and told my friends who are outrageously computer savvy that I just experienced wireless internet. And his dad, I think, kind of worked for Bill Gates, so he was way early on the tip of wireless internet. And they not only refused to believe me, my friends who are now...
Ever happen.
It's impossible. It never happened. You never saw that. Yeah, oh, look, there it is, Bigfoot. I mean wireless internet, Chris. Dur, her. I got made fun of mercilessly by my idiot smarter friends who didn't believe wireless internet was an impossibility. Now compare that to now when it's ubiquitous. You have to have it. You have to have it everywhere. That the fucking iMac. I never had one.
Yep.
I was thinking about making the Switch.
I had an iMac.
Max, that good?
Not the first one, but I think the second one they rolled out. Not when it was just the first. It started out as just the blue color. Mm-hmm. Mine was aqua.
Aqua. Oh, you had the aqua one. I want to get a watermelon iMac. Does it only come in N64 flavors? I got really confused by this one as we move into movies. Jesus, this is number one at the box office this week.
Number one at the box office.
I thought this was a totally different movie just from the description and the stars.
Beneath the gently rolling hills of Appalachia, a deadly secret burns.
I got 50,000 barrels of cyanide rolling down there right now.
Protected by the silence of a town living in fear.
The young'uns are dying. People down here don't take the strangers. They do a hard day's work, go to church on Sunday, that's it.
We have a special visit to our community.
Now, an outsider has come into their world.
You really are new here.
Kind of stand out a little bit, do I?
It sounds like he's doing an impression. I hope we didn't say Seagal and you just got to hear that for yourself.
Yep. Fire Down Below.
Fire Down Below.
Is Chris Christopherson the villain there?
Yeah, Chris Christopherson and some Harry Dean Stanton.
Harry Dean Stanton as a Poe farmer.
I love Chris Christopherson.
But I think the story goes this movie was originally written for Bruce Willis, and he didn't want to do it.
I guess I'll just imitate him.
So it's got two credited writers. Well, they had to rewrite the movie to make it a Steven Seagal. Like, he's okay. You have to kick two people's head around. Yeah. Like, how do we make this happen? So completely, it was. Imagine this as a upfront drama. I got it confused with On Deadly Ground, but I'm not alone because in foreign territories, I noticed they just sold the film as On Deadly Ground 2.
Hmm. Oh, geez.
Because it both involves Steven Seagal being the only character he can, and an environmentalist message. He's kicking the ass of oil farmers and not oil farmers. I'm getting it mixed up, but it's Steven Seagal versus corporate people who are fucking up the environment. Wish I had a better description than that, but I'd be a lot stupider than I sound now if I watched more Steven Seagal movies.
This is a much better movie than On Deadly Ground. On Deadly Ground's a hilariously bad movie. This is like a watchable, just sort of little action or whatever.
Is it? Yeah. Diana has seen multiple Steven Seagal films.
Surrounding cast seems way better than any other Steven Seagal movie I've ever heard of.
Yeah, no, he's pretty Steven Seagal-y, but he's not as Steven Seagal. You know, I mean, think about, like, Under Siege. Like, Under Siege is a watchable movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of the same. It's like, that's pretty watchable.
Executive Decision, yeah. Well, Diana, don't go away. I'm going to need you for Miss Brown.
Mrs. Brown, a.k.a. Her Majesty Mrs. Brown, which is Judi Dench as Queen Victoria, and Billy Connolly as a Scottish guy who helps her get her lust for life back after the death of Prince Albert. It's a damn good movie.
How many Oscars was it nominated for?
I believe Judi Dench was nominated.
Of course it was. God, the Academy loves this.
It's kind of nuts that, like, this year she's making another movie where she plays Queen Victoria,
really?
Meeting an outsider and they have a special relationship. She's doing Victoria and Abdul, which is a Muslim guy. This is, I mean, it's fun. I did not need to see Billy Connolly's dick.
Whoa!
Oh.
What's he packing?
I mean, it's hard to tell because he's going swimming in, like, the North Sea.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the epitome of shrinkage.
I was in the pool!
Yeah. it's fun. As someone who likes your classy, middlebrow British historical dramas,
a really
good one. And Judi Dench as Queen Victoria is just perfect casting. She just kills it. So, yeah.
We also have First Time Felon, starring Omar Epps and Delroy Lindo, directed by Rock! Charles Dutton, of Alien 3 fame.
I think it might be an HBO movie.
I think it was, too, because I feel like
it.
I've seen it, but I cannot remember. Inspired by the true story of Greg Yance, given a choice between 5 years in jail or a couple months in a boot camp. He chooses boot camp and finds out it's tougher than he thought it would be. Probably a little semi-autobiographical, because Charles Dutton was arrested for murder in his youth.
He
killed a guy. Oof. Did a bunch of time and spent most of his life trying to aid causes in champion rehabilitation. But my favorite movie... I'll get a couple. The Alarmist with David Arquette and Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, this is...
Ryan Reynolds. Very young.
Really, like, baby-faced Ryan Reynolds. I looked it up. It's not even close to his first thing, but it's like... He's still got so much little baby fat on him. He's so cute, little Ryan Reynolds. This looks like a wacky comedy where David Arquette plays a home alarm salesman, and he has he has affairs with like Kate Capshaw, who's like a lady there, and then there's
top
wackiness.
Top billed on the poster is. I'm trying to look it up right now to see how many other films she was in. She's been in stuff after that.
Yeah.
Kate Capshaw just sort of like, nah, I'm just going to be the richest director in the world's wife.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a wacky comedy. Again, we're post Pulp Fiction, so there's got to be some like wacky misadventures with crime. The reviews are pretty bad, so I'm not even going to bother.
Hana B.
Fireworks,
Takeshi Kitano.
Yeah, beat Kitano, man. Beat Takeshi, a.k.a. Takeshi Kitano.
Yes. Again, of Takeshi's Castle fame, which became Most Extreme Elimination Challenge. That's him. It was I never connected the two.
He's an actual star and filmmaker.
Yes.
And yet, that's what you
But now he's
for.
Kenny Blankenship.
Also known for one of the hardest NES games ever.
Yes, has a terrible video game somewhere. I actually did see this movie, the Hal Hartley film... Is it Hal Hartley?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Henry Fool. Wait, maybe I did not. Let me check on that. So what's it about?
It's about a garbage man and a writer, and because it's Hal Hartley, there's kind of A lot of talking and moping. But it stars
James Urbaniak. Dr. Venture.
Wow.
And a star of Difficult People. Immediately, and I was watching this.
I can't imagine him 20 years younger.
I was watching
he looks the same.
Wow.
Yeah, I was watching this drunk while falling asleep just because James Urbaniak. Oh. Fuck yeah, I'll check this out. And within like 4 minutes, he's a very uncomfortable, awkward person. A woman comes into a gas station and pretends to flirt with him. And she moons him, and he immediately projectile vomits all over her ass. And it's one of the funniest things that's not supposed to be funny that I've ever seen in my entire life.
I gotta say, like, one of my favorite things about Difficult People, I love that show already, mm-hmm. but all the pet names that James Urbaniak has for, I forget her name. But,
Julie Klausner?
Yeah. Just, like, the most recent one, he called her my little red band trailer. That's great.
I want to be called that. Sweet.
But for Chris, and I'm going to guess maybe Dave.
Yeah, I love this movie.
Yeah.
Maybe not Diana.
No, I like this movie
okay.
too.
Okay. The most notable movie of the week is this one.
What would you say if someone offered you peace and happiness through all of eternity?
He was a missionary.
Have a nice day.
On a mission.
Hi, my name's Joseph Young. We're with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Boss? Some guys from Jesus?
Are you making a movie here?
Yeah.
Well, what kind of movie is it?
It's an action...
Need a hand?
Adventure...
That's handiwork.
Porno.
You make me so horny.
Like as in pornographic?
And I want you to take over as the leading man in my film.
Come on, boy.
Wow. All
right. Orgasmo.
Yes. Orgasmo.
South Park only started a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I guess they were like, oh, fuck it, let's release this now.
There's also like a movie with this name and the premise cannot release widely.
Mm.
Well, not only that, like, it got hit with an NC-17 rating despite, like, dude, we talk about that all the time, but South Park gets away with more than this R-rated movie.
I mean, there's nudity, that's it. But like,
there's
fun,
but
fun,
very limited
nudity. But it's about a porno.
Filthy
it's,
language.
Yeah.
About but it's a yet another Trey Parker and Matt Stone taking it to the Mormons.
They're just
the
obsessed with the sweetness of Mormons.
Yeah, Trey Parker apparently dated a Mormon girl. My friend did, and I, you know, would just ask her a ton of questions. I learned a ton about the Mormons, and it is fascinating, and it's easy to make fun of. But I get it. It's very weird. I'm not quite there because they did more charity than any church
I ever went to in my entire life.
Actual Christian acts happening in the Mormon church. Mm-hmm. And I know they've done some other bad shit. I'm not sticking up for the Mormons. But this, I love this movie, and I'm not positive, and I tried to double-check it. Of course it's shot before South Park.
Yeah.
But I was trying to figure out, was this, like, did you know you were about to make one of the most popular TV shows of all time?
Because they did this in conjunction with Trauma. I believe.
That was the first one.
That
was Cannibal the Musical. Yeah. And that was their first film, and they released that way later. We talk about on a Laser Time about theme songs. The Braniff thing you hear at the end of South Park is a song from Cannibal the Musical. There's some Trauma references in it.
Given the amount of like work that they put into this, I would assume this was before they were making South Park.
It wasn't
until South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut where it was like, oh, they bit off way more than they could chew and tried to move at the same time. Because I think with basketball, it was directed by the Farrellys.
One of the airplane guys.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Zucker, whatever.
Abrams or Zucker.
The other one,
So, like, that, at least, it wasn't their main concern.
It wasn't. It seems like Parker stars in a movie every 10 years. Yeah. He's in Despicable Me 3 this summer. Top lining the cast. I'm like, I'm sorry, did people know who Trey Parker is? They haven't.
Yeah.
Mainstream audiences haven't seen his face in anything in 10 years. And even then, he was behind puppets.
Though I'm sure like 95% of the people who saw Orgasmo first watched South Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's partially
because I also watched basketball before Orgasmo because it was so hard to find.
It was very hard to find. So I don't know if this is the exact timeline of it, but it got hit with an NC-17 rating. It was a very independent movie, so it couldn't really dispute that. So I think it was released by a lot of other independent companies on VHS and DVD.
Yeah.
And it was something you heard about in rumors.
Yeah.
They put one of the soundtrack songs in an episode of South Park sort of like to tease you. Mm-hmm. This exists somewhere. Let's cross our fingers and hope we can actually see this movie someday. Yeah. It was a movie of legend for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. This movie did introduce us to...
Stunkcock!
Stunkcock, Squeak.
Squeak, yeah.
I mean, that's his name in basketball. I forgot what it is in this, but he's really good in this. He appeared in like 2 South Park episodes. I don't know if he still like works with the
remember his name
Trey and Maddie.
Dion Baker.
Yeah, but I love him in this movie. Like, Dad, I don't think I want to do Hamster Style anymore. Okay,
he's a Mormon missionary trying to make money by working in a porn film.
Yeah.
but he won't fuck anybody. So they just scream stuncock. And Matt Stone, I think unicorns are really cool.
Only reason I know of Geddy Lee the lighting guy is because it's one of the best dreams ever. Because
this is like pretend South Park hadn't come out. The biggest star in this movie is Ron Jeremy in a small role. So I don't know how it thought it was going to get distribution, let alone how it found financing. It was a box office bomb. I think it reports $600,000 of its $1 million budget coming back, but I'm sure it's made its money back over
for
time.
For sure, with DVD.
Yeah, it was born to be a cult film on DVD and VHS.
I mean, it's coming out, Blu-ray, DVD, DVD-A.
Two discs. DVD-A, which that's our closer. But kind of a delightful little film. I'm sure it doesn't hold up that great, but just fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun. Very filthy.
Dirty, fun.
But too gross away. It's just sort of like dildos are funny.
Yes. Yeah. It seems very tame by modern, just by like South Park 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Orgasmo seems tame as fuck.
Though I love I don't want to ruin it, but every time you think you're going to see boobs in this movie, it's hilarious.
And one of my favorite things is there's a scene where Trey Parker has to make love to an obese woman, and he uncredited dubbed in her own voice, and not only it's Trey Parker fucking himself, but it also it's technically pre-Cartman, so it's kind of a Cartman voice for this big lady that is affectionately known as T-Rex.
All right, fellas, I'm ready to fudge.
Oh, my gosh.
You want me on top?
No, I'll be on top.
You're going to make me come, or I'm going to kick your butt. Come here! Come here now! Oh, baby! Oh, you make me so hot now! Come here! Oh, you make me so hot!
All right. I haven't seen this in a while. I don't know if I can still go to bat for it, but man, it was. I miss having rumor movies that you can you find.
Did
this?
Did you hear they made a movie?
I think my friend's boyfriend's friend has a VHS copy of it, and if we can track him down, we can see it. And that's how Orgasmo was for us. Like it was very hard, difficult to find. It's credited for releasing now, but I don't know fucking where. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I saw it for another year or two.
Yeah, probably some Colorado Film Festival sort of thing. But I'm going to campaign for this one to be a Monday night movie in September.
Ooh, that would be fun. And maybe finally get us banned for this entire process of the Monday night movie.
That's interesting. I've got a movie I want to go to bat for as a Monday night movie. We'll get to later.
Okay. Would you actually come on it?
If I can schedule, sure. Yeah.
I was expecting you to back out immediately when asked. But moving into 1997 TV, September 1st through the 7th.
Let's take a sharp turn. September 6th. Princess Di's funeral is watched by more than 2 billion people on TV.
You make me so sad. Oh, yeah.
You're going to make me cry, okay?
I'm going to kick your butt. This was, I mean, again, like we said last week, this was all anyone was talking about for a week. And, funerals on, and it's in the morning in the UK, which means it was at night here,
Time.
And it was like, it started, I don't know, like midnight or 1 a.m. Wow. Everyone stayed up to watch it. And then like, it was so like, it was sad with her sons walking behind the casket and Elton John singing and like her brother giving a speech basically was like, you all killed her.
Well, really?
Yeah, he gave I don't know how he could hold himself together. Like at funerals, if anyone is choked up, I'm immediately choked up too. Crying is contagious for me. I just immediately start crying if someone else is crying.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to like give a speech without your voice choking up, where he basically says she was hunted by the press.
Wow.
The family she married into are a bunch of assholes. Yes, I'm talking about you. You fucking killed her. I hate you guys so much.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, obviously, he doesn't say it that hard, but.
No, but in the scathing British kind of way.
Yeah, the spirit of it really was the royals and the tabloids, you're a bunch of murderers. Yeah, okay. It was hardcore.
That's awesome.
Speaking of incendiary speeches, the MTV Video Music Awards on September 4th had a Fiona Apple accepting an award and saying, the world is bullshit.
Yes.
I do remember this.
It was parodied a lot because it was. I don't know. Yeah. It's just like so fucking 90s, and it's such a teenage thing to do. Yeah. But a good song, Fiona Apple. She's best new artist this year at the awards.
I guess Virtual Insanity wins video of the year, which deserves it. Because, I mean, at least from a holy shit, this is a crazy visual thing.
It's, if music video is an art, this is the highest achievement of that year, for
okay
sure.
OK Go gets a glimmer of an idea in their heads. Yeah. And Chris Rock was the host.
Chris Rock was the host. Because I think he wasn't yet... I think he started the meanness of the host, which has carried over now into the Golden Globes. But finding a mean host, Chris Rock started that.
Also on cable this week, September 1st, 1997, the Disney Channel changes from an HBO-esque premium pay channel to a standard cable channel that's just included in packages and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that was it was a hard sell trying to get my parents to subscribe to this channel. It was $15 a month. But it was nuts. I feel like I grew up watching not only Disney movies, but Disney cartoons. It was The Wonderful World of Disney and The Magical World of Disney on two different channels. Hmm. I grew up watching their nature documentaries. About that time, old Mr. Coyote got a hankering for some pie. I watched all that shit. Grew up watching all of it without cable, and then it went away overnight and went behind a paywall. Hmm. And I could never watch it until there was a free preview, and I kind of taped everything. I was obsessed with wanting the Disney Channel, and when I wasn't paying attention... They just removed it overnight. And they still don't have commercials on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. I've said that before on other shows, but I should have got a clip of it. You'll see like a 2-minute Just Dance sizzle reel. Yeah. And instead of being a commercial, it's really long. And at the end, it's like, Ubisoft is proud to support the Disney. Like, Ubisoft is a swear fealty to the Disney Kingdom. It's not technically a commercial, but yeah, Disney Channel, we talked about on a Laser Time, Nickelodeon had dominated cable ratings for an eternity, and only somewhat recently in pop culture history, Disney Channel totally kicked the shit out of Nickelodeon, and since that has happened, they're done. All their audience has moved on to other formats. They'd rather watch a Minecraft stream than Dog with a Blog.
Or maybe some of these other
heard they're really
Saturday
struggling.
Morning Fair. There's a lot to talk about.
Oh, goodness.
September 6th, NBC continues its move into live-action Saturday Morning Fair. They had,
yuck!
They started with Saved by the Bell. Now they go gritty, kind of. Not really. But here's City Guys. And I just want to... Here is the theme, which is kind of just unbearable. Let's see how long we can last in it.
Oh, we got so many of these.
R-C-I-G-Y, you can see why these guys pull those looks in street clothes. It's all good coming from city people. They're all the same. Open up your eyes. Roll with the city guys. C-I-G-Y, you can see why these guys, the new guys.
This thing goes on for 50 seconds.
Hip-hop,
so
hooray.
So many different weird filters.
My God, that's wonderful.
That's very nice.
A little slice of wonderful.
Some more well-regarded Saturday Morning Fair. Recess debuted on ABC's One Saturday Morning.
If we were younger, that's a big deal. That show ran for a really long time and spawned several films, including at least one theatrical
movie. And One Saturday Morning, I don't think it technically launches until next week, but that's like ABC's like final...
One of their flagship shows.
Yeah, but that's what their block was. Mm. And it was one of the final... Like, I think within 2 or 3 years, like everyone gives up the ghost when it comes to Saturday morning cartoons. Mm. So like this is one of the last, you know, major blockbuster new Saturday morning things. But that same morning, Extreme Dinosaurs... which is a spinoff of Street Sharks debuts in syndication. I just love this theme. So
the themes
aren't dinosaurs by their nature kind of extreme.
Totally.
And also this such a wonderful idea for a TV show, a Saturday morning cartoon, had it come out 5 years
five
earlier.
Years earlier,
1997. I think we're all a little bit above Extreme Dinosaurs.
How do you make a dinosaur more extreme? Maybe like a caffeine addiction.
Yeah.
Maybe some rocket powered skates.
Yeah, laser cannons.
Laser cannons.
Laser cannons.
Well, let's see the song. The song will tell us everything we need to know.
Okay.
Something's really rocking on planet number 3. Modern man's got prehistoric company. A colossal fossil fusion, unlike anything before. Between the reckless raptors and the extreme dinosaurs. Extreme, extreme, extreme dinosaurs. Tails that snap like dozen clocks. Talking, stalking, raptors have extreme.
This is...
Okay,
this
so
makes me so...
I wasn't far off with the laser cannon.
No, not at all. And...
Mostly
more,
running around punching people.
Dinosaurs are that. You've always wanted that. You just didn't know.
We want to be like super granular with like this. This is so late for this this tone
and
style.
It's Ninja Turtles, but
which is
way
10
too
years
late.
Old yeah. as a show, yeah. not even as a comic. Ninja Turtles is 10 years old. But man, there's a somewhat notable.
Yes, we have also a finale. The Mask animated series has its final episode, which was a two-episode crossover with Ace Ventura: Pet Detective. So it's Jim Carrey interacting with Jim Carrey, but with neither voice actor as Jim Carrey. But it's two Carrey characters interacting with each other. Here's a clip.
Cause I'm a Big Dipper. Least you can do is take this seriously.
Okay, I'm serious. I'm serious.
But first.
It's like you can barely tell which one is which. But Rob Paulsen is Stanley Ipkiss, the Mask, Jim Carrey.
Okay.
And I think there was a Dumb and Dumber cartoon as well. Yeah. Where Matt Frewer was the voice of Jim Carrey's character. Lloyd Christmas. I wanted to see both of these. Never did.
Yeah. I captured a clip of the ending. This is, if you want to hear them like a little bit more in depth, but this is the end of the Mask of the Animated Series.
Why do this in the finale? Why not do this to save your show in the first episode?
Well, the Ace Ventura cartoon still went on. So.
Thanks for everything, Ace, really. But there's just one tiny little thing. I'm going to need those photos.
So him with the mask.
This is one secret I'd like to keep a secret.
No sweat, my dual-natured compadre. Take care, then. Bye-bye now.
See ya.
He forgot to get his mask back.
Spike, where we're going, they don't have masks.
Wait! Go back!
He steals... What? Ace Ventura
steals
the
mask's mask. But...
Jesus Christ.
Man, I just thought,
I've never seen a children's cartoon present so much of a paradox.
And, I mean, you watch that clip, it'll be embedded. Mm-hmm. Just the rapid-fire, bad, non-joke jokes. Like, I don't know if I can actually poo-poo things like Date Movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. All those shitty movies that don't make jokes. Like, I was watching this on Saturday morning, and there are no jokes. There's just, like... breakfast cereal, but like for 2 hours. Like,
but that like wasn't a joke. Where we're going, we don't need masks.
I know.
That's just a reference.
Yes,
but it doesn't actually make any sense.
Yeah,
I don't. Oh, that sounds awful.
Why are you making two things I love into something one thing I hate?
Yeah, and the mask is because it's so based on cartoons. You'd think it'd be a natural for a cartoon, but that looked awful.
Imagine Jim Carrey was in 3 movies within a span of 12 months, all of which got made into cartoons.
We talked about this on an episode about live-action movies that became Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, Jim Carrey came up in conversation because he like kind of re-emerged in public, and it's just like, that's the last huge star I can remember, and I don't know if you could ever be as big as Jim Carrey was in 94 through 97.
Yeah, now he's just painting and may have supplied drugs to a... woman who killed
herself.
There's one other animated thing to talk about, but let's just quickly go through two other things.
Yeah.
The Tom Show debuts on the WB that stars Tom Arnold as a TV executive moving back home to Minnesota, which is like, this is the final finger on the monkey's paw that Tom Arnold owned.
You're out of wishes, Tom.
He burned it all. He burned on Roseanne,
Lies.
The Stupids, True Lies, and now the final finger is the Tom Show, and it lasts one season and is gone.
Mm.
But more notable on, I think this is UPN, the season 4 premiere of Star Trek Voyager hits UPN, and Jeri Ryan joins the cast of 7 of 9. She's one of the more notable characters in the show. I didn't know that. I thought she was on it the whole time. But
I just would have assumed the same thing. But then involved in a terrible scandal with her dumb husband.
More notably, there is a finale this week.
Thank you.
September 4th, 1997. The Duckman series finale.
We get to talk about Duckman.
I love Duckman. I, for some reason, was not watching around the time of the series finale. I think it was moved around.
They moved it to Sunday night.
I went
around Googling like what was behind this cancellation. And Duckman is a USA cartoon, a cartoon on the USA Network, based on an Everett Peck comic series, and by comic series I mean 6 issues turned into 70 episodes. It was a Klasky Chupo joint that they started right around the time they got kicked off The Simpsons, but I think Peck had said The Simpsons was running about $1.2 million an episode, and Duckman was running half of that. But not getting half of the Simpsons audience because they're on USA on Sunday. He said the executives who liked the show left. They just kind of abandoned it. I think it is relic-y. It is intentionally, jarringly ugly in that Rugrats, Klasky, Chupo style. It's very cynical and mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know Henry had talked about like some right thinking people can attribute a lot some values.
This Duckman guy's always saying it.
Yes,
like
telling it like
is.
It is. Well, he's just screaming usually or like lusting after tits.
Yeah.
But it's to me it's there'll be nothing else like Duckman ever again.
He's not presented as like this guy knows everything.
Yeah.
He's perfect. No,
everybody
like,
hates everybody hates him. Everybody's better than him.
Yeah.
But Duckman's a great show. Jason Alexander, the voice of Duckman, really fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
And because we'll never get a chance to talk about it.
Yeah.
Except I want to point you to Talking Simpsons did as an experiment an episode about the show, the episode About Face.
Which I always thought was the premiere, but it's not.
Yeah, it's not. It's like the seventh episode, but it's really, really good. And a lot of Duckman, it's not quite that it holds up. It's just awesome. There was nothing else like it, and there'll never be anything else like it. It's perfect, and there's 70 episodes.
For some, like... kind of peanut butter and chocolate, two way different flavors that just worked well together. Like this, I remember this debuted that like I think the same night as Weird Science.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, well, the cartoon looks interesting, and I've never heard of this Weird Science thing. I guess I'll
this
too.
Like,
and it's like, whoa, this is a show about
PG sex comedy.
A babe who does computer magic. Like, okay,
and I love that block as a young man. Yeah. Like, I'm okay.
Go right from SNCC to those two shows.
Yeah, go to SNCC into that, and then to SNL. I'm like, yeah, I don't need to go out on Saturday night. Fuck the kids in my school. This is great. But I love those two shows. I love Duckman, and since we'll never get a chance to talk about it, I wanted to play one of his most infamous rants. He's locked in a mental institution talking to two doctors.
And driving, and shopping, and eating, and working. Somewhere, somehow, they all got chewed up and spit back out. They don't taste like living anymore. Don't you see what it's like in this deranged, wearing blender of a world? Every day is an agonizing ordeal, like balancing a pot of scalding water on your head while people whip your legs and butt. You never forget your senior prom. You think I'm sick? Well, the only disease I've got is modern life. A schnut-busting gauntlet of inefficiency and misery that's one long parade of letdowns, put-downs, trickle-downs, shut-outs, freeze-outs, sell-outs, numb-nuts, nick-and-puts, and nimrods. All making every day as much fun as waxing a flaming Pontiac with your tongue. Or even if you do luck into the possibility of some fleeting pleasure, like, say, if some nymphomaniac telephone operators with the muscle control of Romanian mat slappers agree to a little strip air hockey, it'll be over before it starts, because some vowel-lacking, feta-reeking cab jockey slams his checker up your hatchback, and the cab is owned by some piñata spank from a Santeria cult in Wacalpa who starts shaking chicken bones at you and gives you a boil on your neck so big all it needs is Michael Jordan's autograph to make it complete. And even with all this, I still drag my sorry butt off the Sealy every morning and stick my face in the reaping machine for one more day, knowing when it's time to flash the cosmic card key at those pearly gates, I won't be in the coffin anyway, because some underhanded undertaker sold my heart, pancreas, and other assorted good and plenty to that same Santeria cult. So does anybody really wonder why anybody is hanging on to by the atoms on the tips of their fingernails while life dirty dances on their digits? And is it really any wonder that I seem deranged?
And this is the whole thing is just beautifully animated. I mean, for a TV budget, it's lovely.
It is lovely. It's lovingly animated. So I do really like Duckman.
Mm-hmm.
I can't watch too many episodes in a row because
they blend together.
They blend together, and it can get so dark and so mean.
Mean,
and
very mean-spirited.
And mostly that it's very ugly.
It's intentionally jarringly ugly.
So ugly to look at. It's one of those where it's like, I will watch this, but I'm doing something else with my eyes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, now's a good time to do some sewing, I guess.
Yeah, it's
so
like,
I don't have to look the whole time because
it's like
ugly.
If you left like a Dr. Seuss set out in the sun and coughed dirt all over it.
Yeah.
That's what the whole universe looks like. I love it. But I do love the show. There is nothing else like it. There's nothing else can ever be that mean. We don't want or need a show this mean again. And guess what? They're all free to watch on YouTube for the most part. No one's keeping track of this. It never won any awards. It never was a ratings winner, and that's why I like to talk about in Champion Duckman. It's a really cool show.
The last episode was also very like...
So this is the last episode, and I have a clip from it because it's unfair. I don't know that they... I can't tell because I've seen different interviews that say they knew they were canceled and intentionally left it with a cliffhanger because the episode is a little even more stupid than usual. The main bad guy in the show is voiced by Tim Curry, King Chicken.
Woo.
Duckman is a man whose wife has died, and he now lives with his twin sister, his wife's twin yeah. sister, who fucking hates him but yeah. looks just like him. Cornfed is dating another one of the Bernice and Beatrice yeah. sisters. Mm-hmm. King Chicken is now engaged to Bernice. Cornfed's getting married, and then Duckman decides to propose and also get married. So it's three weddings at Ben Stein's wedding. Ben Stein plays a character named Ben Stein, and it seems a little hackneyed, but it has a cliffhanger that has never and will never ever be followed up on.
If anyone knows why these couples shouldn't be wed, speak now or forever hold your peace.
Doesn't count.
Then I pronounce you husbands and wives. Kiss them if you got them. Stop! Stop the wedding!
So, Sally, too late. You should... Beatrice.
Beatrice?
Beatrice?
Beatrice. Who's Beatrice?
My wife. My first wife. I mean, you're alive.
Well, yeah, sure I am. Didn't Cornfed ever tell you?
Duckman, I can explain.
To be continued.
Wow.
And that's it. We find out Duckman's wife has been alive the whole time. Cornfed knows. And that's it. There's no... I think they said they didn't have a follow-up written at the same time. Mm. So there's just no closure for the show, but it doesn't really need it. And just Jason Alexander's performance.
I think
George Costanza is the funniest character on television ever, even though Seinfeld's nowhere close to my favorite show. Mm. He somehow manages to turn the dial up from George Costanza and scream and yell even more. It's a really, really fun show. Check out Duckman, or check out Talking Simpsons episode about Duckman, about Face. Again, all the episodes... on YouTube. You can check them out for yourself. But that's, Jesus Christ, that closes out a big week of TV, but just even
big games.
Not a lot of games, but a really, really big one.
A big classic, Tecmo Stackers.
Tecmo Stackers. They were really obsessed with their own name for a while.
Yeah, Tecmo Deception, Tecmo Stacker, Tecmo Bowl. Like, you're an okay developer.
Yeah. Konami didn't call it Konami Basketball. Yeah.
We didn't have Square Final Fantasy VII this week. We just had Final Fantasy VII. But
Mario All-Stars, not Nintendo All-Stars.
Tecmo Stackers, it's like a Puyo Puyo sort of match 3 game.
I'm tired of Puyo Puyo.
Yes.
I was going to let the clip explain it.
Destroying all that's in its path. He's up to one soldier of fortune to save the world. If he succeeds, you survive. If he fails, you can always hit the reset button. Final Fantasy VII, only on PlayStation.
The PlayStation weirdly did have a reset button.
It did have a reset button. Even though that's kind of moot when like a disc has to spin 400,000 times for your game to start.
Square Final Fantasy VII out this week in America.
I have nothing to say about this except I hate their hair so much. I hate that dumb anime hair.
Well, some of it is because of the limitations of the technology at the time. They have little triangle hairs, but this is Final Fantasy VII.
I know it's unpopular to say this, but still my favorite JRPG ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Sorry, I sounded so disgusted. I don't have the dog in this fight.
Well, for me, it was my first Final Fantasy. I didn't really play Final Fantasy on the Super Nintendo. Like, the game that introduced me to RPGs was Earthbound, which was at the end of the cycle, and then there was Chrono Trigger, which I really liked. Then Suikoden, Wild Arms, like, all great RPGs, and then this, just a culmination, looks the best, has, like, the biggest story. Like, it is a bit disjointed, and the translation is good, but there are a lot of errors in it.
Well, it's clunky because it's Square trying something brand new. There's a billion reasons why this game is exceptional.
Yeah, like, the setting, I mean, Chrono Trigger did it, and I know, I think Final Fantasy VI also sort of steampunky future. But this is, like, totally, like,
yeah, but there's modern... our CG cutscenes.
Yeah.
Things we think that only Pixar is capable of are now in Final Fantasy games instead of text boxes.
But,
well, there's a lot of text boxes.
But to me, like, RPGs are, they're set in olden times, and you use magic spells, and this does have magic, but it takes place in a metropolis that is being, like, crushed via pollution and corruption. And that, you're a guy just trying to fight against that and save the world.
And it's
super fun, and the cast of characters is great.
I think I do think it was a huge achievement in video game storytelling.
Yeah.
And also at this time we have the console wars, Diana, where like the Nintendo Entertainment System has had a lot of time to grow its library, people to rediscover old games. Old games had a lot longer lifespan. Yeah. And we Final Fantasy was always pretty popular in America, but at this point, it's white hot because all of the games are really popular.
I think this like brought RPGs to another level.
And
like,
they'd always been Nintendo exclusives. Yeah. And this is Sony saying like Square doesn't want to work with Nintendo anymore because of their draconian licensing fees and some of their policies.
To put this game, like it was a famous print ad I remember from this game. It said this game would require like 20 cartridges. Mm-hmm. It's three discs on the PlayStation, but like all the CG cutscenes could not do that.
On Nintendo 64 because Nintendo went with carts, so they could charge video game makers a fee to buy their special dumb carts.
But this is like the first RPG I can remember that was fully polygonal.
Yep. And speaking of notable commercials, Americans might remember this.
Excuse me. You look like a guy who likes fighting and role playing games.
Huh?
I'm talking Toe Ball number one, my friend. When the demo of the groundbreaking and greatly anticipated Final Fantasy VII built right in. Sound good? Now get your hands off my truck.
So I hadn't really seen anything like that
built
before.
It's a separate disc.
It's a separate disc, but it's a Toe Ball number one commercial a game, Toe Ball number one, and they only show quest
mode.
That
game.
There's no fighting in it at all.
Yeah.
But it's a weird fighting game. It went on to sell a million copies, I think, on the strength of...
Yeah.
It also has a demo disc for Final Fantasy VII, and it was sort of... Not the PC players had had shareware and demos for a while, but consoles didn't have anything like that.
Yeah, there was like the PlayStation Underground demo disc.
There was.
Like you get one with your console.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having a normal packing game, you get a disc that had like
a freer
five
subscription
levels.
Service. But the first is did Metal Gear maybe do it first?
This did it before Metal
Gear.
Yeah,
like pack like so people would. People not only knew they wanted this game, they could replay the opening and the movies, the first 20 minutes, over and over again as they anxiously awaited this new game. So the hype was crazy big in a way that I never saw for
also,
a launch of a Final Fantasy
these
game.
These were like, I was starting to read video game magazines more, and I would see like all the previews of Final Fantasy VII because it came out in Japan in January.
Mm-hmm.
So like people would, like, some magazines would be like, we played it. Here's like what's going to happen. Like, we have a guy on our staff who knows Japanese and he played it and he has all this information, and it's like, holy crap, I want to read all about this game because I'm so excited about it. It looks like the culmination of every RPG I've played before, except it's all polygonal now. Like the overworld is polygonal, the fights are polygonal, you got these great CGI cutscenes,
they were really pretty,
insane story and all that. Yeah, and also a benefit of it, like, it did take 8 months for it to come from Japan to America, but they like streamlined a lot of stuff. They made it easier. They added the Emerald and they added the two weapons who are like super bosses that are optional, but they will give you great shit if you're able to beat them. But I love the game. Story is great. Characters are great. I like the materia system where you have a certain amount of slots on your armor and weapons where you can put spells into it. And you might have like a sword that is super powerful, but has like one or two slots for your spell, so you got to be more meticulous with choosing what spell you're going to use. But you could have a weaker weapon that has a lot of slots, so you can have a lot of spells at your disposal. So interesting little dynamic.
The biggest evolution the series had. I'm only pointing that out to give a shout out to Final Fantasy 15. Like, it's the closest thing we've had to a Final Fantasy 7 in that it kind of keeps some of its tradition and subverts things that most people would find synonymous with a game and just leaves them out. It, making for a better and more modern experience. It was nice. I thought 15 coming out was like living through the launch of 7. But that is all we can say about 7.
Yes.
It is currently allegedly being remastered right
now.
Yeah,
let's see. We talked about Metroid Prime last episode. I bet that still beats Final Fantasy 7 Remake to market because it's
going
to
be a minute. But we got to close out the 1997 segment, and there is no better song to close out anything in the universe than a song by DVDA, the band featuring Trey Parker and Matt Stone. This is Now Your Man. Yes, from Orgasmo.
What makes a man? Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top. So we can know your story. Now you're a man. Now you're a man. You are now a man. You're a man. Now you're a man.
Now you're a man.
Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of September 1 through 7, yeah, not great. 75 years ago this week, 1942, we had Across the Pacific, which is a John Huston movie's follow-up to Maltese Falcon with pretty much the same cast. But it's really boring and it's not fun at all because it's war propaganda about conspiring with the Japanese. And it's just boring. I was super disappointed when I finally got to see it. Also, this week, 42, The Big Street with Henry Fonda and Lucille Ball. Before she was known as, you know, a comedian in I Love Lucy, she was like a sexy movie lady, and she plays a nightclub singer in this, and it's pretty good, actually. Oh, and also this week, 42, 75 years ago this week, How to Play Baseball, the first of the how-to Goofy sports shorts. Sports Goofy is finally here, 75 years later. It's also confusing, I don't know. Anyway, 50 years ago this week, 1967, I'm actually a couple days off on this, really because I just wanted to talk about Point Blank so much, but the finale of The Fugitive, the TV show, took in 78 million viewers. It's still one of the most highly watched things, like percentage of people watching it, of all time. And also out is Fastest Guitar Alive, which is a strange attempt at a Western starring Roy Orbison, who's not really known for action. And just like last week when we had the head of the American Nazi Party die, September 1st, 1967, the bitch of Buchenwald, Ilse Koch, dies in jail, I think. She was 60. She was the wife of the commandant of Buchenwald and Maschneck death camps during World War II. And she committed suicide because she had delusions that concentration camp survivors were coming after her. To which I say, good. That's like the best kind of, that's poetic justice. That's wonderful. So, based on that, I am absolutely not recommending Ilse She-Wolf of the SS. That is a disgusting sexploitation movie. I would never recommend it. And if you've seen it, you know why, because it's gross and stuff. So, I am going to recommend probably the most recent movie I've recommended, the 1993 version of The Fugitive, the movie with Harrison Ford. It's a real solid little movie there. Interesting, fun, good characters, moves along real fast. Yeah, if you haven't watched it, check it out. The Fugitive from 1993. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Coming in with Motorhead, Ace of Spades, which will appear in a movie we'll talk about shortly. But in 2007, September 1st to the 7th, you have new albums by Ted Nugent with Love Grenade, which had an original cover almost exactly the same as the one parodied in This Is Spinal Tap. Really?
Seriously. Really close. Smell the glove.
Hip Hop History by Master P. Is that two Master P albums in one show? And Romeo Miller in the Movies by Ice Cube and Street Poetry by Hanoi Rocks. Not so much for news. I think these are exciting movies.
Yeah, we got two I really want to talk about.
Yeah, starting with the least exciting, The Hunting Party.
Right.
Richard Gere and Terrence Howard. It feels like Richard Gere has spent the last 15 years making movies in an alternate dimension so I don't see them. He's a top-line star in every movie, but this looks awful. This looks so boring.
They're mostly indie movies. I think this is about reporters in Sarajevo, I want to say.
How about movies for adults?
That'll do it. I got kind of mixed reviews. Mm. I don't know which
is the two biggest movies for you. I can't assume it's The Brothers Solomon.
It is not.
Because I saw this. I was anticipating this movie.
Yeah,
incredibly.
Amazing cast.
And this trailer's pretty fun.
I guess I don't understand the dating scene. Really is a mystery to me.
Now, to give their father something to live for.
He said he wished he could see his first grandchild.
They'll have to go.
Make a baby for dad!
Where they've never gone before.
What do you say we get out of here, and I go put a baby in you? No strings attached.
Will Forte, Will Arnett, yes. Kristen Wiig in The Brothers Solomon. And this is a big... I've said this a billion times. One of my favorite people in the world is Bob Odenkirk. Mm-hmm. Bob Odenkirk, writer on Ben Stiller's show, Saturday Night Live, and Mr. Show, the greatest sketch comedy of all time.
Yeah.
And after that, kind of struggles. No one really wants him as an actor, and he moves into directing, and his movies are usually not that great, but always star Will Arnett. Melvin Goes to Dinner is a fine little indie, but what was the other one?
Let's Go to Prison.
Yeah. Based on the Tom Lennon, Ben Grant script. Did very poorly, reviewed very poorly. Nobody likes it. Brother Solomon, like, that movie's fucking disappeared.
Yeah.
And it warms my heart that the world found out that Bob Odenkirk is awesome, that he's now one of the biggest stars on television and one of the what might be one of the greatest shows on TV right now.
And it's also like a shepherd for good comedy.
Yes.
Like Tim and Eric.
Making new shit for Netflix, Birthday Boys.
Yeah.
Like, I love Bob Odenkirk. I think Wired wrote an article that said this man is responsible for the internet's entire sense of humor.
But, I mean, this is still a thing I enjoy. You get to see, like, this is what your favorite SNL people did on their summer vacation. Like, and Will Forte, great, like, staples of SNL at this point in time. Like, oh, this movie looks like a funny concept. They're kind of clueless, almost like Kimmy Schmidt-style brothers who don't know the first thing about women. And I forget if they were, like, brought up in some sort of weird situation, but they need to find a woman to impregnate to make their father proud.
It's what's weird. I don't know what to call this type of comedy, like a Romy and Michelle or Dumb and Dumber. Like, nothing explains anything about these characters' personalities because they act in a way that no one would. But I love movies like that.
Yeah.
And Dumb and Dumber didn't have to do that. Neither did Romy and Michelle. But they are so weird in a weird way that there's no canonical reason for. So clueless about everything.
Yeah.
And it just, I desperately wish it was funnier. It was written by Will Forte, but they had to impregnate a woman to preserve their family line. And it did not fare well at all. I've never heard anybody mention this movie, which seems bizarre for a movie written by Bob Odenkirk and starring Will Forte and Will Arnett.
I mean, pretty much everyone in this movie would go on to have good careers, but it just took a while.
Yeah, everywhere else. But that's The Brother Solomon, but... Guessing, Diana, these movies are the ones you actually care for.
Yeah, we got two. Where do you want to start? We got one that was number one at the box office this week.
Let's keep that. We'll save that one.
Okay, well, let's go. This is the one I want to talk about for Monday Night Movies.
Ooh.
Shoot 'em up.
Oh, you have caused me no end of trouble. Tell me where the woman and child are, or I will be forced to cause you considerable agony.
Nothing could be more painful than listening to you jabbering on and on.
Yeah! Stop fucking shooting me! God damn it!
I'm crying. I love Shoot 'Em Up.
Yeah, I've heard.
I love this movie.
I think it reviewed poorly, but I've heard nothing but praise from people, scant praise over the last decade about how much fun this movie is.
Yeah, it's the kind of movie. I mean, cartoon wise, it is supposed to be a hyper violent Bugs Bunny Elmer Fudd cartoon. Mm. It's basically what we're dealing with. I mean,
it's what I like about The Transporter.
Yeah, it's vaguely similar, but with a lot more comedy. The idea that it would be so ridiculously over the top.
Doesn't somebody get killed with a carrot?
Yes. I mean, someone gets killed with everything.
Awesome.
I mean, think the only movie I could compare it to, kind of like Crank, in the idea that they're going so over the top. And a lot of people didn't quite get it, but I think it did better, through word of mouth on DVD. It is so freaking goofy. So it's Clive Owen is the world's greatest guy with the gun. And he doesn't just shoot
gun artist.
He doesn't just shoot people. He's constantly shooting things next to people to make it like fall on that guy who then shoots his buddy and then
That's what I love about The Transporter, he uses a gun like a laser pointer.
Yes,
I'll unlock
yes.
this door with a bullet.
Yeah. And that Paul Giamatti is the bad guys after him and his girlfriend.
God damn motherfuckers.
After him and Monica Bellucci. I mean, look, he uses a gun to cut an umbilical cord, okay? That's where this movie starts.
Oh, man.
It is so goofy and so fun. And Clive Owen and Monica Bellucci just, beat Drive Angry to the gunfight during sex scene, which is great. It is so crazy, and I don't know why more people haven't discovered it. A lot of people have, but I got to go to bat for this. I watched this on a bad movie Sunday because it did not get good reviews. They said it was really stupid. And we watched it and we're all like, are we watching the same movie? Like, is there another movie called Shoot 'Em Up? Because this is really freaking fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been meaning to rediscover this one. I should. This is the one I'll check out. I want to do it at some point because, I love slow burn movies like this. Like how I think we all wanted X versus Sever to be. Is how people actually talk about Shoot 'Em Up.
Yeah, where God, it's old. Just so... creative. It's just the creative chaos.
Yeah, I'm just glancing at the IMDb trivia, and the director, Michael Davis, is just like, no explosions. Everything has to happen with guns and bullets. no booms. And it's, if you just think about it, an action movie with no explosions. Jesus Christ.
But a fuck ton of carnage still.
Yeah.
Just guns.
Well, this movie I remember even less. And I have seen it. I own it. I've seen it twice. I remember not one thing about it.
Okay.
But it's number one at the box office. A remake.
I've seen him. There's got to be 30, 40 more guns out there now.
Watch, you in there?
If you take them to the train, Pa, I'm going with you.
They're going to kill you and your father, William. And I'll laugh while they do it.
It's weird.
Wow.
It's weird. I know.
What train are they catching? They're catching the 310 to you.
200 miles to Oregon.
Yes.
No, that's a Simpsons reference.
I had no idea what genre this movie was before you even clicked on it. I thought it was going to be a World War II movie.
Well,
it's a
remake of a Western. It's just
I've never.
The Westerns are like the weirdest genre because there's like one a year
that
everybody loves and is critically praised, and we never see it again. I think because it doesn't seem to get television airing.
I guess. I don't know. I love both versions. I love the original version and this, the remake with 310 to Yuma here with Russell Crowe and Christian Bale.
Christian Bale is
a real solid movie. James Mangold again. We've had him constantly on this show of Logan fame.
Which is, it might be my favorite movie I've seen in a theater this year, Logan.
I mean, that's very
really
much
good.
A Western, too.
Yeah, very much.
Yep.
Very much.
Yeah, no, it's just a really well-made movie. I feel like this is Russell Crowe's last good performance.
Oh, shit.
I don't know. Yeah, before he, I don't know, just sort of get it. He seems a little bloated and lazy these days. I don't know what's going on, man.
He lacks a little bit of menace that I think he used to have. You look at Russell Crowe and you get kind of like, he's a scary looking dude.
Like, oh shit, he could mess me up if
this,
he wanted to.
This guy looks like he would start a bar fight for no reason.
Yeah.
And he does.
Yeah,
Ford
exactly.
Round the...
he's a Old West gang leader, and eventually he is captured, and a member of the posse is just a normal dude, Christian Bale. Mm-hmm. It's like his job is to get him onto the train to Yuma so they can, you know, get some justice and hang him and whatever. And a lot of it's kind of this weird psychological game between the two of Russell Crowe talking to him about like, you know, my boys are coming. You know they're going to kill you, right? You know, I know Ben Foster and he's coming. and bad things are going to happen. Why don't you just let me go? No, you could just let me go now. And it's and then it becomes
a lot of trouble.
Kind of becomes like a siege in this hotel. It's really good.
I'm just curious to see what Christian Bale is like as a normal guy.
Is he ever really normal? Really?
Yeah. No, he always plays the same kind of character. Yeah I'm just disaffected.
I'll save you all. Just fun.
Yeah. I want to see him be English more. How about that? How about that, Christian Bale?
I know. It was so weird when he's on like a American talk show and he uses an American accent.
Does he really?
Yeah, well, at least for Batman. And I guess he said, like, I don't want to confuse the kids.
That's so
but
strange.
It's like, what are you doing?
It's like him and Mel Gibson, like, who told you to do that? Was that were you coached to do that by somebody? And holy shit, there was just a video online. Did you know Larry the Cable Guy doesn't have a southern accent when he talks normally?
Mm-hmm.
It's the most bizarre thing
that
you've ever
crazy.
Seen. On the other level, well, shit. I knew this got really great reviews.
Yeah,
at the time.
It's good.
And I think because the nature of its action-y and a remake, it didn't get acknowledged at any fucking award shows and kind of fell off the map. But I own this on Blu-ray, and I can't believe I don't remember any of it. I might have to check this out again. So glad
definitely.
You can remember it. And you like it better than the original?
Just barely.
Mm-hmm.
They're neck and neck. I really like the original too. I feel like the tension. The claustrophobia is better in the original, and the tension is better in the remake.
Glenn Ford.
Yeah, Glenn Ford.
Film. But 310 to Yuma. Jesus Christ, D. All right.
Yeah.
Went to bat for two mainstream Hollywood movies
in
the 2007 segment. That
can
does
we
not
just point
happen.
Out how manly those movies
they,
are?
What
and
is
I'm
wrong
the
with
one
us?
Who's like, fucking shoot them up, man.
You're watching the Queen
man.
Movies and the Westerns.
Monica Bellucci's titties.
Oh, sadly, we have to move out of movies and into television.
For just a minute, because it's not a big week.
But a big goodbye, something big we tease at the beginning.
Two big goodbyes, one to someone fictional and one to someone real. September 4th, 2007, Secrets of the Crocodile airs. This is a special taped a while back where Steve Irwin attempts to learn the secrets of the crocodile and why they have survived for 200 million years. So it filmed 2 years before, but it aired on this day in 2007, on the exact 1 year anniversary of his death from 2006.
That's good, because I hear there was some other footage, but it was pretty unusable.
Ooh, yeah.
How has that not leaked out? How have we not seen the crocodile hunter being stabbed by
a
stingray?
Why we haven't seen Owen Hart fall. Like, it's there, but why would you ever show that to anybody?
I don't know. It's the fucking internet. I feel like I see everything, whether I want to or not. It's going to autoplay in my Facebook feed.
Nope.
But it's nice that there was a piece of footage, like a thing he did that I'm sure he was probably
and
proud
a
of.
A good catharsis, I guess, if you were impacted by Steve Irwin's death, and then like a year later, we haven't forgotten, here it is.
Yeah, here's something something he did for the last time, and it's not just about, Jesus, Putin's waking up crocodiles and putting his finger in his butthole. It's like
that's a South Park joke. But,
yeah, talking. We're referencing South Park a lot more than The Simpsons. What's going on here, Dave?
Crazy.
What is going on here?
Let's move on to a completely different animated series, Kim Possible. Mm. The final episode of that animated series airs. I don't really know that much about it. It's about a girl who is a spy.
Yeah.
A modern spy.
I know she's got a naked mole rat. I think that's fun. I love Nick and Mulroney.
I do like the theme, though. And it's also, this theme is outdated by 2007, if you want to play it.
Yeah, I'd love to play it.
Oh, yeah! Yeah. Your face is average, girl, and I'm here to save the world. You can't stop me because I'm Kim Possible. There is nothing I can do when danger approaches. Know that I am on my way.
Lovely. Lovely. And the show was incredibly popular. Burned white hot for a good 4 years. And as we see, as we saw in the last segment, people could finally see it. It was on the Disney Channel.
The theme is, you don't have to pay to see it. The theme is Call Me, Beat Me If You Want to Reach Me. In 2007, who's getting beepers?
Christina Milian?
I'm a popular musician.
Yeah, caught up in the wave of Kick-Ass Ladies, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We've got Aliases on the air around the same time. But a good long run for a cartoon show at that time. I like that we're finally seeing cartoon shows run longer than 2 to 4 seasons in 2017. But that didn't used to happen at all. Like, four seasons, 87 episodes is great for a cartoon like Kim Possible.
But let's move on to games of 2007. This week, a couple big games. We have Medal of Honor Airborne on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. This is Medal of Honor and Call of Duty. I feel like they're both a year away from like having... becoming big annual franchises.
I forget how exactly that worked. Call of Duty just went Modern Warfare, and people were laughing. Yeah. This is what happens in the span of 10 years. People were laughing at Medal of Honor for bothering to stay in World War II.
Yeah.
This year, there's no Medal of Honor, and Call of Duty's going back to World War II, because that's what everybody wants now, to go back to World War II.
Yeah.
And I just saw an awesome clickhole headline about that. You get penalized for shooting good Nazis in the Call of Duty World War II game.
A more notable shooter, I would say, from that week is Stranglehold on Xbox 360. This is Jet Li game, right?
Well, Diana, you'll be happy to know this is John Woo's follow-up to Hard Boiled.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
So it's Jet Li playing the same character?
Yes.
Wow.
It was a bizarre time, because now that... the station that picks up the mantle of franchises that they're no longer making films about for whatever reason is comics, but there was this weird time where it looked like it might be games. We'll continue the story of Ghostbusters and Hard Boiled and movies people don't want to seem to finance, but will make giant games that are way more expensive than movies.
But the game was good. I liked playing it.
It was good.
It's a lot like Max Payne. It's a third-person shooter where you can slow down time to get more precise shots. In this game, it's called Tequila Time.
Tequila Time. Yeah, if you've ever seen Hard Boiled, and like if you want to slide over countertops and slow down time and shoot bullets, it just lets you do that all the time, and it's entertaining. It kind of it overstays its welcome after a few hours. Yeah. I remember it was the first game. It came out on Xbox 360 and PS3, but the PS3 version had free Blu-ray. Hard Boiled.
Oh, cool.
So you could see the movie and then the follow-up, the video game sequel to Hard Boiled. But it was the shittiest transfer of all time. But this is still when Blu-rays were $30 and that was it. That's
so did you say Jet Li was involved?
No, I meant to say Chow Yun-Fat.
Jet Li's not in Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
And because Chow Yun-Fat plays a guy named Tequila.
Yeah, and it was an incredibly costly failure. I believe this is one of the things that sunk Midway, video game publisher that have been around since
the
arcade game.
Also having a press event at a big bar with tons of tequila.
Uh-oh.
They spend a lot to rent out a big San Francisco bar for a long period of time and apply
I'm terrified
a lot of alcohol.
By this. This is also, I guess we could say 10 years ago, was Little Chrissy Pants's the first time he is on a video that's put on the internet.
Wow.
Because I was an intern at a little company called Gamsrader. They're still around, and they just... unceremoniously dumped a lot of the old video footage that was in the non-YouTube player on, like, nobody knows where it is. Yeah. But I did find it. I'm proud to say it has 69 views.
Whoa.
Me and my buddy Paul Ryan, and my idea was, because, like, you know, a boss like, I want fresh ideas. It's just like any newsroom. Yeah. Like, well, it's a game called Tequila Time, and they're at a bar. We'll have free drinks. Why don't Paul and I down tequila and see who can play the game better after half an hour? Like, just we'll line up 7 to 10 shots of tequila.
Oh my goodness.
And just got hammered.
I was at this event, so I'm curious to see if I'm in the background of this video just like scoffing.
I can't believe how fucking young I look.
Guys.
I consider San Francisco my new life, but it's been a decade and I look way skinnier. This is vegetarian Chris. I'm terrified to turn this on. In fact, why don't I just not do it?
It's the last one.
Why don't we just not do it?
I want to see this.
This is it's going to have real bad sound, but because there's no mic on us at all. This is the early days of video on the internet.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Paul.
And we're interns of Games Radar.
We're here at the Mezzanine in San Francisco. We're going to try out the Stranglehold demo.
They were supposed to have multiplayer ready for us, but they don't have it ready.
So we're going to explore the finer workings of Tequila Time by taking tequila shots every time we activate a tequila bomb.
We just skip to the end. I want to hear you guys super
I think I'm playing it up, because, like, I felt fine. Mm. Like, I think Paul, he booted and didn't show up to work.
Recap.
Stranglehold is the best game ever made.
I used Tequila Time several times. I would suggest, if your Stranglehold copy does not come with a multiplayer, that you just take a shot of tequila every time you activate Tequila Time.
Because I...
Than you did.
I'm so faking it. This is hard to watch. This is real hard to watch, and I'm smoking. It's been it's been a minute since I did that. Sorry about that little deviation, folks. That was sort of fun to do. I don't know why, but I could never sit through 3 minutes of that for some reason. But that's weird to think about. We were the rapscallions of the video game. I didn't know how buttoned down people would be in the left coast. But it seemed crazy. We're taking shots at an event. Like, we're 25 years old. Why is this nuts? Give us more free drinks. But yeah, I guess that's the games. That's the games for 2007.
Yep.
This is our official close to September 1st through the 7th. We got some cool comments, of course, and we'd like to highlight some of those. Even though we do a full-on, full feedback show over on patreon.com/lasertime, that's how we survive. That's how we keep the studio up to date. Hosting, all that good stuff, pay one another, live, rent, all that shit that literally help us do this for a living in all of our other shows. So we encourage you to support us there, and those who do get an exclusive bonus show every 2 weeks. But we want to bring up JGB Sterling. He brought up the 10th anniversary of BioShock and how it led him to many other discoveries. And he says, oh my God, BioShock is the game that single-handedly brought me back into gaming. I was in junior high at the time. I know. And one of my classmates was telling me about the game where you explore an underwater city with crazy superpowers, and I was instantly intrigued. Previously, I had pretty much fallen off of gaming completely for some reason after the PS2 era. In retrospect, it probably wasn't a very long hiatus from the medium, but for a few years at least, I wasn't paying attention to video games at all. So later that week, we happened to end up in the local EB Games, and he showed me the box, and it just fed more into my mystery around BioShock for me. It led me to Googling around for more videos and information, which led me to discovering game trailers, RIP, then to Giant Bomb, which I still follow to this day, and eventually to Games Radar and Talk Radar. So in a roundabout way, BioShock is what got me into Laser Time in the 2010. For the actual game, it remains one of my favorite games of all time. I go back and replay it frequently, and I never get tired of its beautiful aesthetic. Everything about from the Art Deco environment, era-appropriate music, the best use of audio logs to exist, made BioShock easily one of the most engrossing games I've ever played in. I went a little long, but BioShock is something I'm very passionate about, so it's kind of crazy. It's 10 years old now, but also, fuck BioShock Infinite. I'm with you, Jimmy. I'm with you. But that concludes our show. We will give some plugs out. LaserTimePodcast.com is where you can find all the information for this show. We encourage you to leave comments, because obviously we try and come up with anecdotes and facts for these movies, but you're probably going to have something we don't, and it might be better. And we encourage you to share those with us so we can then share them on our other show and right here. LaserTimePodcast.com also is home to LaserTime, the show that is kind of like this, but it is topic-based. Diana has joined us for a bunch of this stuff. I wanted to give a shout-out to one of my favorite things you ever did, Diana, which was a classical music quiz, was to take these stock public domain classical songs and, like, figure out what movies we know them from and what they're actually called. And some of that, very little of that, I retained. And I know that song from the Abe Froman scene. And Diana has a name for it. It was really, really fun. Thank you for joining us for that. And Talking Simpsons is a chronological look at The Simpsons. That's another podcast we do, and we do YouTube videos on youtube.com/lasertime.
Yeah.
Sometimes relating to the games we talk about
I'm
here.
I'm kind of tempted to either do Stranglehold and bring back some tequila or Bioshock.
I would not be against that.
10th anniversary.
Stranglehold probably deserves some attention. Hard Boiled is a rad fucking movie.
Yeah.
And it has a neat little game follow up. Yeah.
And, the Laser Time Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime, is also home to Bonus Time, our weekly bonus show where we talk about what we're interested in 2017.
Yes. If you missed Brett Elston from the show, we have a full-length commentary for Shin Godzilla. Brett's a giant Godzilla fan, and I get to see it for the first time. It might be more interesting in video, and you can see that if you're a patron for $5. We also have a full-length commentary to the DuckTales, Disney XD's DuckTales premiere with two of the biggest duck fans I know, me, and Cartoon 101's Matthew J.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you want to hear more about video games, I know we got into a lot of video games these last couple weeks.
It's been weird.
I'm sure there's more coming, but just video games all the time at Vigigame Apocalypse. Mm. And I'm talking movies, classic movies, etc. on Twitter at LeCineNerd.
Yay. Ooh.
But now we have to, let's get morbid. You got to tell us about some deaths.
Let's get morbid. Tell you about who died over this week. 1987, Richard Marquand died. He was only 49.
Who is that?
The director of Return of the Jedi.
Whoa. Jesus, really?
Yeah, only a couple years later, 4 years later.
Wow, at 49.
Yeah.
So weird.
I think if he had lived in, then maybe would have gotten to do one of the prequels.
Or an Ewok movie. Yeah. It could have been worse.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
And Quinn Martin, he was only 65.
A Quinn Martin production?
A Quinn Martin production. So many TV shows from the 70s.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, my God. Then in 1997, we had a big one that I remember after Princess Diana died, people were like, is she getting as much attention as she just? I mean, this is a lot of attention. Like, what about when Mother Teresa dies? Are people going to go crazy too? A couple days later, Mother Teresa died. She was 87.
That's got to feel like the end of the world.
Man, Mother Teresa got Farrah Fawcetted to Princess Diana's Michael Jackson.
She totally did. Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, yeah, that's too bad.
She was old.
Yeah, she was 87. Yeah. She didn't, you know, get chased down by paparazzi, as hilarious as that might have been. Mobutu Sese Seko died. He was the dictator of Zaire/Congo for 30 years, and then problems happen generally when those
that
people
movie
die.
Flopped. And
yeah, exactly.
I only remember that because Chris Rock, making fun of the Elton John song "Candle in the Wind" for Princess Diana on his show, did a tribute to Mobutu. Like, that's the wow, that's so weird. I totally forgot about that.
And then I didn't realize on the same day in 2007, Luciano Pavarotti died and Madeline L'Engle.
Wow.
So
who's Madeline L'Engle?
Wrote Wrinkle in Time.
Oh wow.
Well,
yep, and Pavarotti was the famous.
Pavarotti.
Yeah.
All right. Sang all the songs with Italian names.
Yep.
But
Chris knows them.
One of the most famous opera singers everywhere. Anytime.
Let's pepper those deaths with a little bit of birth. Dave, I swept it last time. I hope someone's keeping track for their wiki.
No, it's been four in a row I haven't gotten.
Whoa.
So
let's see if I can make it
to,
an
I
even
need
six.
To fight back.
Is it the same formula as... Well, hold on. You got to have the music.
Birthday is
wonderful. The birthday quiz, Diana usually gives us
one man and one woman. We'll start with one man this time. Born this week. Born September 5th, 1951. He has released, I actually found about 47, but let's say 37 films for a lifetime worldwide gross of $4.7 billion.
What year was he born? I'm sorry.
51.
51.
Steven Spielberg?
No. In order of box office gross, top to bottom, Toy Story 3, Minions, Spider-Man Homecoming, The Other Guys, Herbie Fully Loaded, RoboCop, White Noise, Spotlight.
What are we? Who are we talking about here? A director and actor?
I'm not telling you.
Oh.
What do those things have in common?
Timothy Dalton.
No. His very first role was on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Mr. McFeely? Oh my God.
I skipped a couple movies where he plays the title character.
Oh God.
Who's in Spider-Man Homecoming that's been
Michael
in a lot of movies? Thank
Dang
you.
Michael Keaton,
God,
sorry.
You people.
I didn't know it was an actor or not. Jesus.
I really thought Spider-Man Homecoming would give it away.
Wow, so
it's all those curveballs from Minions and
Toy Story 3.
Who is he in Toy Story 3?
He's Ken.
Yeah, he's Ken. So in a weird way, Michael Keaton's one of the most bankable movie stars ever.
$4.7 billion.
Or just a great agent.
We were so bad at that, it went through the entire
song. We lost
song.
The whole birthday song.
Seriously, going through his filmography, almost everything would give it away. I had to skip like Batman and Beetlejuice.
Mr. Mom. Which is the title role in.
Even the Dream Team. Everything else was a giveaway. So I had to find a way to do it. To stump you, and I kind of did.
Yeah,
you did.
All right.
Did I get it or did Dave?
I think you got it.
Yeah. I think you it was kind of close. Okay. For ladies, born September 1st, 1957, she is one of this year's Kennedy Center honorees. Due to a bus crash, she fractured her spine. She has two titanium rods in her back. She's a cyborg. As a student, she worked as a translator at the Miami National Airport. She has 3 Grammys and 3 number
Gloria
one
Stefan.
Hits. There you go.
Yes! Right. Finally!
No!
Yes.
No. I was doing so well.
Nice. Good comeback, Dave.
The Long Island answering machine, David.
All right. Well, to close us out, what's taking us out,
this
David?
This is Final Fantasy VII from Team Teamwork. He's made a bunch of great mashup albums that take classic video game songs and classic rap songs and mash them together in really
Ocarina
cool
of
way.
Rhyme.
Ocarina of Rhyme, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. But the first one that I ever heard from him was Final Fantasy VII. And this is the mashup between Final Fantasy VII's battle theme and Mop's Annie Up.
All right, people.
Love it.
We'll head out with that at lasertimepodcast.com. Tell a friend, like us on Facebook and Twitter. We love you. Good night.